If everyone has lemonade stands, I think we can do it. These inspiring words were expressed by Alex Scott, the little girl who was battling childhood cancer and decided to have a lemonade stand in her own backyard to help fundraise for a cure. In honor of Alex and everyone fighting this disease, join S&T Bank June 1st through the 8th at all bank branches for Lemonade Days. Enjoy treats and activities. Help us support research, awareness, and hope for these children and families in need. Let's make people our purpose and build a brighter future together. S&T Bank, member FDIC.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Oh, yeah. That's right. On this day, November 3rd, 1956, Max, that's 2 years before I was born, so you know this was really old. But The Wizard of Oz made his debut on TV on this day in history, my friend. How about that?
Wow, there we go. So you were born during black and white television is what you're telling me.
Well, understand, first of all, okay, it made its debut on TV. Now, Frank L. Baum wrote the book way back, all right? And it was The Wizard of Oz was filmed in 1939. Actually, it came out 1 week before World War II started when Germany invaded Poland, if you can imagine that. So it was released nationally 1 week before that. Great googly moogly.
Wow.
That
is
wild.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Yeah, well, we know who the bad witch was, all right?
Yeah, yes, we do.
Exactly. Yes, we do. Well, it's funny because The Wizard of Oz only started making money after it was re-released in theaters in 1949 and 1955. And it was the TV that made The Wizard of Oz so very big because CBS broadcasted it in 1956, and they got 35 million viewers. Think about that in 1956.
That is pretty crazy, right? I mean, I think that's what's actually wild because, you know, you think about Wizard of Oz and you think about just the fan fave that it is. My daughters love Wizard of Oz.
Right.
In fact, my daughter did a play last year and she was the good witch.
Oh, good.
She was Glinda in the tale.
Your daughters are too pretty to be the ugly witch. You can't do that.
Yeah, and who wants to be green? You know,
yeah, I mean, that doesn't work.
Unless you're Shrek or Hulk. Those are the only two times.
Or the Jolly Green Giant. That was a commercial that I grew up with, you know.
That is true, but he was also healthy, so I don't know how well that does for offensive linemen.
Yeah, that's true. Like that's a good
with
point.
With the veggies. Yeah. Yeah, there was no cheese, you know, with the
You got no
Jolly
cheese, you can't have. I'm sorry, it doesn't work. You're right.
Yeah, no, it just makes it tough. It makes it tough. But now, so did you know, here's a little known fact. What color was Dorothy's dress in The Wizard of Oz?
Oh, wow. I can't remember. That's a great question. So what color was it?
Her dress was actually pink. It was
really?
Not blue. Everybody associates blue. That's more Alice in Wonderland.
I was leaning towards blue, but I was like, nah, that doesn't sound right. So,
yeah, because it was almost like in Technicolor when they were filming back then, the three-strip method.
Right. The three-strip method. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, the Technicolor, it was an expensive film process where you had to use the three different strips to kind of overlay to show colors and everything. That was the whole thing about Technicolor.
How about that? And you even know the answer, for crying out loud. I couldn't even have a laugh at that. Way to go.
Yeah. But yeah, but no, it was because it was blue and light pink was what they had to change to make the color pop.
Oh, that's interesting. So, yeah. Now, yeah. This in back in let's see, Time Magazine called The Wizard of Oz the most popular single film property in the history of TV. I thought that was amazing. You know, it wasn't shown again. Now remember, they only showed it in 49 and 56 and then 59. And then over the years, Oz has captured on average, 53% of all sets in use at the time, and 30% is considered high. Now, that's pretty amazing. You got quite a run going on here with The Wizard of Oz.
Wow. That's pretty fantastic to note that. I mean, you could actually have that much popularity held with something that you don't see as frequently, right? Because in today's day and age, right, everything's binge watching. Oh, we got the whole entire series out on Netflix, or it's at least weekly, and then there's replays throughout the week leading up to the next episode. So to hear that, I mean, that's what's fantastic about this tale is that, you know, it's carried through time, and you can use the word timeless on it because no matter when you play it, like, people stop to watch that movie. I mean, my girls, I think we were flipping through the TVs. I think it was like last summer, and it was on. It's like we had to stop. No matter what point it was,
right.
You just watch it as is.
You got
to. Then they asked to watch it from the beginning again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think about this. In 1939, it was released. Gone with the Wind won the Oscar for Best Picture in 1939. Citizen Kane was also released in 1939 as well. Yet neither of those matched the epic proportions of audience, you know, conglomeration like you're just talking about, as did The Wizard of Oz. Isn't that amazing? And think about this. Gone with the Wind didn't appear on TV until 1976, 20 years after The Wizard of Oz appeared on TV. I just thought that was amazing.
Wow, that is pretty awesome. All right, I got another one for you, Wolf.
Okay, all right, hit me up with it. Let's go.
Dorothy's famed ruby slippers?
Yes.
They were originally silver.
No way.
That's
no
what they were described in the book. Yep, they were silver. The only reason why was that the MGM studio head, Louis B. Mayer, which is Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, is the name of the studio company, wanted to show off Technicolor, so he changed it to ruby.
Red. No kidding. Because,
yeah,
of course,
he wanted to show off.
They showed, after the cabin landed in Oz, she comes out, and then it's in Technicolor. Yeah. And all of a sudden, and there had not been color TV. It was only black and white back in the day.
Yep.
How about that? You know? Not bad. I'm looking at – all right, who was your favorite character? Let me ask you that.
Oh, Toto. No, just joking.
We actually have a little dog named Toto.
Oh, my gosh. See, you guys are Wizard of Oz fans. See,
oh, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
No, I would probably say the Cowardly Lion was probably mine.
That was my favorite, too. I liked the Cowardly
Lion. Oh,
Put him up.
Put him up.
That's it. You do it better than I do. I like that.
You got to put a little more in
it. Yeah, got him more of the puh.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one thing I didn't like, you know, because it was like the Tin Man with no heart. I mean, he was cool, but like I said, we have no heart, man. You know,
right?
I don't
know,
I'd rather just have courage. I mean, I'd rather earn courage, but have the brains and the heart. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I probably most closely associate with the Scarecrow.
I mean,
we're
a
lacking
transition.
A little brains. Yeah, yeah.
It's a transition. You know, hey, as long as you're not the Tin Man, right?
Yeah, exactly. So be that stiff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Now
you can't be stiff and you can't be cold.
All right, who freaked you out most? The winged monkeys or the witch?
Oh no, it's definitely the winged monkeys.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
To this day, I still, you know, you know, you watch it and you see those winged monkeys. You know, man, them things look evil, don't they? You imagine those things flying along. You know, I remember Halloween. You know, and you go out there and you see somebody in a witch outfit, and all of a sudden you're a little kid and you're like, going, "Where's the winged monkeys? Ah, they're coming to get me. Oh man, I got to go home." You know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Like, you see that? You see that? You're just like, nope, not today.
Not today.
Not today. No, I think I have a lot of indoor things to do today. Nope. It's cloudy with a chance of flying monkeys. I can't do that.
Oh my heavens, yes. But anyhow, on this day, and November 3rd, 1956, The Wizard of Oz made its debut on TV. And I have to say this, that was a Wolfley staple. You know, Ronnie and Dale, my sisters, Lenny Rain, Joy, you know, we all sat around. It was a big event, you know, because you'd sit there and we never went to movies and stuff like that. You know, we were little kids. So you're sitting around and you go, The Wizard of Oz, and you'd be like all day long waiting for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like you said, it was something you just look for. That's when it was appointment television, you know? Like,
good point.
Like events were so much bigger on television. I mean, now, you know, once the advent of like the 24-hour news network and the success of that really pushed the envelope as far as what other stations needed to do. Because you remember, you know, I'm sure, especially back in your day, you know, in my day, television went off at a certain time, right?
Mm-hmm.
They showed the American flag, they played taps, yep. And then the TV just turned off and went to black. So there was nothing to watch. If you were a night owl or working a late shift or something, or just up late, like, you couldn't just watch television and just watch a show. Like, it was like, nope, we're done. Everybody's asleep. You need to be too. So
that's true. That's, yeah. I wonder how many people can remember that. You know, and it
24/7. Exactly. Yeah, everybody else, you know, now you can literally watch something and not go to sleep and have an insomnia inevitably if you wanted to be. You know, this is the last one I want to mention. Little Wizard of Oz trivia, Wolf.
Okay.
What was the Tin Man supposed to cry when he cried? What type of substance was supposed to come from his eyes, quote unquote, if he's a Tin Man?
I thought it was oil.
Yes, you are correct. Good job.
Oh, yeah. All right.
But in the movie,
what happened?
It was chocolate syrup.
Oh. Okay.
Because it filmed better than oil.
I see. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Uh-huh. So, Wolf, you would have been licking your face the entire time while crying.
Yeah, I could say that. That definitely for sure. I will tell you this. How about this? Did you know that Toto was a female dog that played a male? How about that?
I did not know that.
Yes. Toto was a female dog that played a male dog in the movie. And here's the one that gets me, because you know the Munchkins, right? Toto made more money than the Munchkins. You kidding me? Now, come on. Well, that's wrong. That's just, you know, what's that Randy, what's the song, you know, Short People? I mean, come on.
I'm actually astounded at that. Because the dog just had to, like, run around and be held.
Right.
Right? The Munchkins had to, like, sing, dance, run around the set and everything and act frenzied and crazy. Yeah, that's weird.
Exactly, that's weird. So. How does a dog
– I mean, I know we love dogs here in the United States.
In the locker room.
Come on.
Yeah, we love our dogs.
Yeah, I love a dog too. You know, what? $125 bucks a week versus $50 – that – you get 2.5 Munchkins for one Toto?
I'm just telling you. You know, what are you going to do? You know, it just happened. But anyhow, the Munchkins could have gone on strike. Hey, listen, I think we ought to.
They did form a union afterwards, by the way.
A Munchkin union, yeah.
It was because. So the original one was led to the formation of Midgets of America Advocacy Group, which is now known as Little People of America.
You got to be kidding me. I didn't know
from that movie, because the lifelong friendships and everything that they gained, they started an advocacy group for little people.
before we go to break, because we got the cool breeze coming, and it's amazing what you Google-ed over there, my friend. But I need to take a moment just to send heartfelt condolences to one of my former coaches at Syracuse University, and that's Tom Coughlin and the entire Coughlin clan. Coach Coughlin, his beloved wife Judy passed away this morning, has been reported. And so mucho love to all the Coughlin family. That's just got to be so tough for him. Coach Coughlin, you know, you think about on that staff way back when, we had Jerry Angelo, who was the GM of the Bears from 2001 to 2011, somewhere in there. We had Nick Saban was on there for a year or two, and we also had Tom Coughlin. Pretty interesting guys at Syracuse in the late 70s. Huh?
Wow. That is crazy who was on that staff.
Really? You know, on a team that finished no better than, what, 6-5, I think, or 7-5 we were my senior year.
Apparently you guys were the experimental team before they figured out their processes.
Well, buddy, we got the cool breeze coming up, so we better head out.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break because we got Jerry Dulac coming up on the other side of the break here in the locker room with Wolf and Starks here on SNR and ESPN Radio.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Jimmy Buffett who? Fire up the blenders. Get your frozen marga pina colada mixes. I'm a Miami Vice kind of guy. I like the little daiquiri pina colada combo when I'm on vacation. It is the one, the only cool breeze, Jerry Dulac. And Jerry is brought to us by Archie's on East Carson Street on the south side. $9 Bud Light pitchers every NFL Sunday. How are you, Mr. Cool Breeze? How are you doing today?
Well, Max, you know, I am fine, my friend. I hope you are as well in the desert. In fact, that's where you are.
At this current time in the morning, at 10:25 a.m., I am Eastern Standard Time, of course, it's 7:25 here. I am in the desert. I won't be tomorrow. I will be traveling to Charlottesville for the University of Virginia take on the UNC Tar Heels. So I'll be doing that this weekend.
See, Jerry, greatness never rests. He's on it. He's on it. He's on the move. You know?
Yeah, you don't even get a free weekend, Max.
No. Bye weeks are for active players, not for guys masquerading.
There you go. There you go.
Team personnel. Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly so. Okay, let me ask you this, guys. Going in now, we came into the bye with got a lot of thoughts in that. Coming out of the bye, what's the single greatest hope that a Steelers fan can have coming out of this bye about what moving forward in this season?
Well, you know, Wolf, to me, it's that they do what they did in 2006, which Max is aware of, and you do what they did in 2013.
There you
go.
And
that is you get on a roll. You know, you try and go 6-2 over the last 8 games. Well, in this case, it'll be 9 games, maybe 7-2. And you try and finish with a respectable record. And, I mean, look, let's be somewhat realistic. You're not going to run the table. I don't think any team's going to do that in today's NFL, to be honest, unless you're the Bills or the Chiefs. So, you know, if you can start carving out a couple wins, get on a little roll, and finish 7-2, you know, even 6-3, even though that would be a losing season, the first for Mike Tomlin. I think that's the hope, and you're being realistic because this is a 2-6 football team that, you know, could easily be 1-7. But and then of course they could have won a few. So you know what I'm saying. I think that's the hope that you have, that you can get on a roll and get back to respectability. Of course, as we all know, there's a faction of the fan base that would like to see them lose every game and get the number one draft pick too, which to me is foolhardy, of course.
Yes.
No, absolutely. No, nobody. We're not in the tankathon sweepstakes. I refuse to believe that.
Tankathon. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're not doing that. Jerry, obviously everybody's off. This is a part of that 4-day mandatory NFLPA off time. What was your sense from this week, just as far as what they were trying to accomplish, how they felt leaving the building on that last day?
Well, you know, Max, today's athlete's a little bit different. And to me, they were thinking on Wednesday, let's get out of here and enjoy 4 days. I don't really think they were thinking about, I need to reflect on these next 4 days and figure out what's been going on and how we can change this. I think, you know, they kept the coaches there an extra day. They're in there today. And you know, they're going to try and figure this out, you know, whether schematically or whatever the case might be. But, I mean, look, there's no question. I mean, you know, the veterans on this team, and there aren't a whole lot, but a guy like Cam, you know, it's eating away at him. But, you know, to think that these guys are going to go spend the next 4 days watching film and going over the playbook and having meetings virtually or by phone, I mean, that's just not going to happen. And so on the best you can do is get away and, you know, realize, you know, that you were close on a couple games and, you know, that you just do the best you can to turn this thing around. And if you're the coaches, you know, they made a couple moves, you know, neither of which are going to change the fortunes of the team. But like, for example, I think the William Jackson trade was done because he wants to send a message, which is he isn't going to tolerate players not making plays in the back end. You just can't let that go unnoticed or unchallenged. You know, 5 touchdown passes, 3 in Philly, 1 against, 1 in Buffalo, and 1 against New England, where the guy was there and they didn't make plays. And then 4 potential interceptions in Miami, where they had their hands on the ball. That's 9 plays they didn't make. And for Mike Tomlin to just let that go and say, okay, we're going to continue to do what we're doing with the people we have. Not that any one individual is to blame. Look, Minka gave up 2 of them, and, you know, Minka's is the best there is in the league. But he had to send that message that we're just not going to stand still. William Jackson isn't going to come in and change things. It's not Darius Slay. You know, it's not anybody like that. So I think that was the kind of the thing he had to do. And then the Claypool trade was only made because – of what they offered, which I still can't figure out. I don't know why a 3-5 team would give up a number 2 pick for an underachieving wide receiver, especially when with a number 2 pick, you can get a receiver just as good or better in the draft. And why I could see if the Bengals made that trade at 4-4 and being without Jamar Chase or some team that's in the hunt and thinks they need another piece to the puzzle. But why a 3-5 team would give up a number 2 draft choice for Chase Claypool is just beyond me. And that's why the Steelers jumped. They weren't looking to ship him, but all along they thought if somebody came with a ridiculous deal, we'll do it. And somebody came with a ridiculous deal and they did it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, that was a, what did I hear? Somebody labeled it a Godfather trade. You know, I'm going to make you an offer that's too good.
Right. And that's what it was.
Yes.
That's right.
Exactly so. But, you know, it also leads me to believe, you know, of course, you got TJ coming out. And with TJ coming out also, one of the things that's been interesting to me was the fact that the Steelers have been playing much more man than they have right. in the past. And so right. I remember William Jackson from his years in Cincinnati. I thought he was pretty dadgum good in you know, man coverage. You know, well, you he know, stood out. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Wolf, I didn't mean to interrupt. And you're right. And Terrell Austin had him for a brief time there when he was in Cincinnati.
Yes.
And they liked the way he runs. You know,
he's a 4-3 something guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good guy. And I think you guys, if you do or don't remember the story, that's the guy the Steelers had targeted in the 2016 draft.
Right.
And then the Cincinnati Bengals made a trade and jumped right ahead of the Steelers and took William Jackson. And, you
I
know,
remember
obviously,
that.
Yeah, they got snookered and they had to draft Artie Burns as a result. But they had William Jackson targeted. That's the guy they wanted. And lo and behold, here he is. But it's also another number one pick, you know, the pedigree that Mike Tomlin likes. And we go right down the list. Carl Joseph, Justin Gilbert, Taco Charlton. There's a few others. You know, if a guy was a number one pick, he has a good chance of being brought in by the Steelers.
No, that is absolutely too funny. Were there any surprises on the trade deadline that you were like, how was this pulled off? And why would they do that? Did you have any of those moments when you're looking through just the entire
besides
trade,
Chase?
Trade wire? Yeah, aside from Chase, obviously talked about that. Aside from that,
That was the biggest one, obviously, to me. I thought it was a great trade by the 49ers, of course, to get Christian McCaffrey. You know, that just gives them another multi-dimensional threat to go with Deebo Samuel. You know, I like that 49ers team. I think people forget they made it to the NFC Championship game last year and lost to the Rams, a team they beat routinely. I think they beat them 9 of the last 10 times, but they didn't beat them when it counted last year. I thought that was the best deal going. I thought the Ravens making the deal for Roquan Smith was a great move by Baltimore. You know, adding that piece to their defense, which I don't think was as, you know, it's not the old Ravens defense. They're good, but they're not the old style Ravens defense. So I thought that was a big move. I thought that was a big move by the Ravens to make that deal.
Let me ask you, what's the one thing that you hope that the Steelers can figure out while they're on, you know, they take this bye week. And one of the things that I always respected was you do a lot of self-scouting. You know,
right,
the scouting
right.
department is combing through all the, you know, the down distance player packages, personnel, everything like that, and in assembling statistics and stuff to be able to, like, you know, go over. And what do you think, what's the one thing that they hope they can come out of this bye week, maybe having solved a existing problem?
You know, Wolf, or as Bill Cowher used to say, we're going to do a lot of self-analysis of ourselves.
I'm so with Bill. I'm so with, you know. You know, and we will not be D-tiered, okay?
You know, I thought Wolf, to your question, I thought prior to the last game that the defense was taking steps in a positive direction to the point where you can maybe rely on your defense to win you some ball games. So I don't really think the defense is that far away, especially getting TJ back. Is that going to be the cure-all? No, but it's going to be a big, big help. So I'm not going to sit there and, quote, worry about the defense as much. But look, there's no question the offense has to figure it out. The problem with that is you have a rookie quarterback, and he's going to make mistakes, and there's no way he's going to know you know, the offense like the back of his hand, opposing defenses like the back of his hand. There's no way he's going to be able to read defenses now the way he will in another year or two or three. So you're going to live with his mistakes. And as long as you're going to do that, you're going to struggle. Now, do I think Kenny Pickett's going to be a good quarterback? I do. I see a lot of things in him, whether measurables or intangibles, that I like. And so I think he's going to be a very good player. But for now, they're going to live with those mistakes, but I'm not going to lay it off on him. The proof's in the pudding with their production and their offensive coordinator. It's just not working. Let's face it, fellas. Since the start of last season, 18.5 points a game they're averaging. When Randy Fittner was here, they averaged almost 25 points for 3 years, and they averaged 26 points his last year, and yet they fired him. And right now they're averaging 15 points a game. So, yeah, there's some new pieces, there's some young players, and you have a rookie quarterback. But when you didn't have a rookie quarterback, they struggled offensively. So that's what they have to figure out. And whatever it is they figure out or try to figure out, Mike Tomlin's not going to announce it, but they have to do something offensively to be able to produce points, because now you just stress your defense. Your defense is good or getting better, but they're not great, and they're not going to shut other teams down. And so if you can only score 15 points a game on average, then guess what? You're going to lose a lot more games. So because the defense just isn't that good to hold teams to 14 points every game. And so to me, the offense has to figure this out, Wolf, and be able to generate production and win some games on their own. And let's face it, we'll have to hold our breath because Ben Roethlisberger isn't here in the fourth quarter anymore to do that. And, you know, based on what we've seen for 25 games, if I've done that math correct, yes, I'm not holding my breath.
Especially over 25 games.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a fairly complete body of work, as Mike Tomlin would say.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, this is the toughest part about watching this is that the offense just is not vertical. I mean,
right.
You know, we shall see what happens after the season, but I don't think it happens in – I mean, do you think – I don't think it happens in season.
No, no, I agree.
Because there's nobody to replace.
I agree, Max. So, you know, that's never been their – that's not in their DNA to fire coaches mid-season. That's why I said if there are changes in terms of getting more people involved, I don't think they're not going to sit there and announce it. But here's the other thing. What are you going to do? You're going to put Mike Sullivan in charge, which would be a good idea. But what's Mike Sullivan going to do? He's going to run Matt Canada's offense because he can't put in an offense in week 9 at this point.
Yeah.
So – you know, the chances of that happening are obviously very slim. And I think you just try and, you know, maybe you get more people involved. The fact that Matt Canada does not rely on his other assistants when doing the game plan is just beyond me. And the fact that at halftime, apparently he does not come down and talk to the players is just beyond me. And I think the players, a large percentage of them have lost faith in the offense. And that's not a good thing.
Well, Jared, before we let you go, on this day, November 3rd, 1956, The Wizard of Oz debuted on TV, okay? So,
yep.
Well, the question of the day is, who was your favorite character in The Wizard of Oz, and who scared you the most as you were watching?
Well,
that?
Yeah, I think, well, yeah.
This is important.
Wolf,
this is serious stuff.
The witch and the monkeys.
Yep.
Right?
There you
the
go.
Flying monkeys.
Yep, flying monkeys.
Scared me the most. And the one I liked the most was probably put him up, the cowardly lion.
There we go. There it is.
That's we are one. Locked but, solid together, the three of us, three amigos.
I will tell you this, though, on November 3rd, and I will not tell you the birth year, my wife was born. So it is her birthday today.
Well, happy birthday to the Mrs. Cool Breeze. All right.
I will let her know that you passed on your best wishes. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jerry. Appreciate
you. All right,
you,
boys.
Brother.
Always good chatting with you, even on the bye week.
Oh, man. Well, awesome. Well, thank you, Jerry. And of course, that is the Cool Breeze, Jerry Dulac, who's brought to us by Archie's on East Carson Street on the South Side, where you can enjoy $9 Bud Light pitchers every NFL Sunday. All right, Wolf, we're going to step aside. You know, we're not going to fly off like the flying monkeys, but we are going to step aside and come back and talk more Steelers football and, of course, more of our intriguing thoughts and quandaries here in the locker room with Wolf and Starks on SNR and ESPN Radio.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
He's going to run this on the keeper around the left side. And he's stacked up and thrown down hard by Cam Hayward.
Yes, Captain Cam. Max, one of the guys that one of the things I wanted to ask you about some of the guys. Who do you think would be, if you got an MVP, man, obviously it's not a great 2-6 first half pre-bye, right? But if you had to point to a guy that played at a high level, could be like a pre-bye MVP type of guy, who would you take? Because I just revealed who I would, but how about you?
Well, since you took Cam Hayward, I would go Miles Jack. He would be probably my other candidate there, especially defensively. I think Miles gave an instant impact. I mean, he was a guy that he just plays hard. He's downhill. He's instinctive. He's made a whole bunch of tackles, you know.
Right.
And the guy has played through injuries and is just one of those guys that's just – he's a war daddy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's game ready. You know, throw some tape on it. It'll be fine. And just get me right. And he's been playing really big. I mean, one of the key acquisitions this past offseason that has been an impact. You can see his leadership and it's rubbing off on other guys. You know, that's the other thing when you think about the MVP, their play rubs off on other guys. And I thought it's rubbed off well on Devin Bush. his game has really stepped up. Robert Spillane and that linebacking core has taken their game up a level because of him being on the squad.
And that's where I wanted to go with this, and it shows what a superior brain you got there, buddy. Because the fact of the matter is, Captain Cam is the one guy that makes the boat. He's like the rising tide. It floats all boats.
Yeah.
When he's there, and I speak to this to Steelers Nation, when you have the opportunity to be inside that bubble and see him and what he means to the other guys, his presence alone is very similar to what Joe Green. I'm not saying it's the same thing. No, Joe Green was just iconic. He was one of a kind. But as I've often said, Cam Hayward's as close to seeing Joe Green as Pittsburgh's ever going to see, if you ask me, in my most humble opinion. But the fact of the matter is, his presence alone is a calming influence. How guys are dynamically raised in their play because of his presence is what you look for. Because every locker room, as we've always talked about, Max, you got adders, subtractors, you got multipliers, you got dividers. And Cam was always a guy that added, but he was a multiplier of the men around him. And I think that's something that, yeah, statistically you can look at things and say, well, it's not this. You got to know what it's like inside the bubble, and you got to know what it's like inside the locker room. And a guy like Cam, I don't even know where this team would be if they didn't have Cam Hayward in there as a solidifying force, as a guy who really raised and kept others to the standard.
Well, and I mean, Cam is just such a tremendous piece, and I think, you know, we were all holding our breath, right? What was that, the Jets game where he went down twice in the game?
Yeah,
and I think that was it. Yeah, I think we were holding our breath because we're like, man, if we lose Cam, you know, that was kind of like the murmur, and you could kind of feel that kind of hesitation on the sidelines. When Cam went down and he had to call for the trainers to come out, you're like, please don't let it be anything bad.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Cam has – when TJ is not present, Cam's influence is that much even more so magnified. And you appreciate Cam just a little bit more when you lose other pieces around you and he's still there. And he is just he's battle-tested, man. He is literally a rock. You know, and you know how hard it is to crush a rock. And nobody's found a sledgehammer big enough yet to try and take him out, which I've been appreciative of. And he stemmed the tide. Because I think if you lose a Cam and you had a TJ Watt down, it'd be very tough. It'd be very tough for anybody to do anything. I mean, yes, you know, Minka would, of course, have the secondary intact. And yes, Miles would have, the linebacking core intact. But that D line, it's so fragile. You know, Larry Ogunjobi has been a nice change up to have on the squad. But you're right, Cam is a force multiplier.
Yes, I really believe that. You know, And again, watching the thing about it is, you know personally because you're a teammate with him, you were in the locker room with him, just being able to watch him and see how the players gravitate around him. And how he is able to push, pull, whatever, with the guys and get them going and be that solidifying force. It's important. You got to have those guys, the go-to guys in the locker room, the guys that you can point to as being there week in, week out, and they never, ever surrender. They never, ever, they don't bleed in front of everybody else. You know what I mean? And that type of respect that you have for his playing capacity, for his ability to keep operating, even when he gets nicked up. You know, it's like L.C. Greenwood once told me when I broke my thumb, and he said, now we'll see what kind of ball player you are. Anybody can play this game healthy. You know, I mean, that's, you know, that was L.C.'s attitude way back then. And it is very much the same here today. But I'll give you another one that I think we got to look at. And Alex Highsmith is a guy that some consideration too. Because one of the guys that I thought about was Bradley Chubb, how much I thought, you know, this guy's a pretty good player. But if you look at their head-to-head stats, Chubb has 5.5 sacks. Alex has 6.5. Chubb has 26 tackles. Alex has 31. Tackles for loss, Chubb 8, and Alex has 9. Quarterback hits, Alex has 9, and Chubb has only 4. You know, all I'm saying is I think Alex has played well, consistently well, coming through this first part of the season. I hope it continues after. But he's a guy that, as you watch him raise the bar and level of his play, he could be very impactful in the second half of the season when you get T.J. Watt back.
No, absolutely. I think Alex has lived up to the expectations we had for him, and he's constantly ascending, you know, in our minds as being the guy opposite T.J. Watt. The only problem is he's been without being opposite T.J. Watt for the last seven games, really, and he still performed. I mean, I think that's a testament to the hard work that he's put in this offseason. And like you said, you hope he continues to progress into a position where he can continue to grow once you get T.J. back. So I'm excited about that prospect of him and T.J., especially with all that he's learned in T.J.'s absence. And hopefully that'll make him an even more complete outside linebacker / defensive end type in this defense. But you're right. He gets honorable mention. You know, we have a bunch of votes, so he gets a couple of votes.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you this. Why don't we open up the phone lines? Because I believe we finally got the phone lines corrected. Yes, Yard. In the second half of what hour? What hour is it?
Oh, it's the power hour.
You know, the funny thing is you never seem to misjudge a nice home run hit there. You know, one of those, I lob you a softball, you seem to hit it out. Me, I seem to swing and miss a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to have to put it on the T-ball stand for you. But it's all good. We're looking for is contact, Wolf. All we're looking for is contact.
That's it, baby. You know it.
That's right. Put it in play. Well, we're gonna press pause and then put it back in play during the power hour as we I took in too much air there.
Do you remember the number, by the way?
No, I don't. I definitely
412-919-1316.
1316. Once again, that's 412-919-1316. The phone lines are back up, Steelers Nation. We can't wait to hear from you on the next side of this break. You're in the locker room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN and SNR Radio.
If everyone has lemonade stands, I think we can do it. These inspiring words were expressed by Alex Scott, the little girl who was battling childhood cancer and decided to have a lemonade stand in her own backyard to help fundraise for a cure. In honor of Alex and everyone fighting this disease, join S&T Bank June 1st through the 8th at all bank branches for Lemonade Days. Enjoy treats and activities. Help us support research, awareness, and hope for these children and families in need. Let's make people our purpose and build a brighter future together. S&T Bank, member FDIC.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.